woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State. 10 years in the making. 10 years we've been doing this. Can't believe it. Bow season fully in effect in Michigan. Waterfowl season full effect right now in Michigan. And we are, for those who like to just fish and drop a line, lots of things going on right now throughout the Great Lakes State. Thanks to our friends at Darton Archery, Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Also, our friends at Costa Sunglasses bringing you the show time in and time again. And we really appreciate everybody joining us. Big deal this weekend. I'm going to be out broadcasting live early morning on Saturday, hanging out at the brand new Gander Mountain store on the west side of Lansing. And this is they had a really big store to begin with. This is an even bigger store, and they're going to be bringing in lots of famous people like Herman Moore from the Detroit Lions, Dean Rojas, pro bass angler who I've had the opportunity to work with at the Bassmaster Classic, and a longtime friend, Nick Munt from Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, will be there Saturday and Sunday. And we are going to talk to Nick Munt right now, who's in the wilds of Minnesota trying to keep a cell signal. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Now, this is kind of a big deal for us. We don't get many celebrities rolling through town, especially from, like Michael Waddell's Bone Collector series. We had T-Bone in here, what was it, last year, I think, or was maybe even earlier this year. Bone was in for a Whitetails Unlimited banquet, but we've got you here 2 days with the new Gander Mountain store.
Heck yeah, man. It's going to be fun. These Gander Mountain grand openings, they're pretty cool. They got a lot of great deals on just about everything under the sun for the outdoors, and a lot of ammunition and good stuff like that. So these are really good, fun events.
It is going to be a big event. Like I said, we're going to be lining people up about 8 o'clock. The store doesn't open until 10. You'll be there. Maybe we can sneak in a little early to come on the air with us as we broadcast live. But this is what I don't understand. Dude, you're filming, and you're also taking time to come to Lansing, Michigan to do a store opening. How the hell is that possible?
Well, it is right in the middle of hunting season, but they do such a good job at Gander Mountain, and they're big supporters of Bone Collector, and so it just worked out just right for the schedule this year, just because I'm taking a little bit of a break here in the middle of October. Things are kind of a little bit slow in the deer woods, so it gives me an opportunity to get out and get around a little bit. And we have a huge following in Michigan. Our fan base in Michigan is phenomenal. A few years ago, we did a bus tour through there, and we just had huge lines everywhere, and the people up there are just so down-to-earth and so great that how can you pull off a deal like that, So we love Michigan for sure, so we're happy to come up there.
Absolutely. Nick Munn is joining us. He is out in Minnesota right now. Are you in the middle of a field? What are you doing right now?
I'm actually sitting in the driveway of a store that I opened with my girlfriend, and it's kind of in the country, so it's tough service, but I'm just about to go. I'm going to go hunting this afternoon, but just kind of messing around this morning, waiting to talk to you. I mean, it's like the highlight of my week.
Well, and I knew that. And that's the one thing I appreciate, the fact that, I am the highlight, not the new store that my fiance told me last, or my fiance, hell, she's my wife now, and I got to get used to saying that. she still sometimes says girlfriend, but it depends on how mad she is at me. But
exactly.
You and your girlfriend opened up a new store.
We did. It's called the Bluebell Mercantile, and it's north of Stillwater, Minnesota, right on the St. Croix River. It's a beautiful river valley. This time of year, the leaves are changing, and it sits right along the scenic byway, and it's a cute little store. It used to be a schoolhouse. It was built in 1870. It's a little white schoolhouse, and we got a lot of really neat products inside, or in the home, and gifts and stuff like that. So my girlfriend's really good at picking out really cute stuff, and yeah, hopefully it'll be good. I kind of have my business that I do, so this is kind of her business, and it's going to be a really, really fun deal. You can check out our stuff online on Instagram at the Bluebell Mercantile.
Excellent. Definitely check it out. We'll We'll throw a link up on our website when we put these podcasts up. But so far, yeah. You know, September really kind of, August, September really starts kicking off the hunting season. And with the Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, what, first of all, what season are you in now with this group? And what have you hunted so far?
Well, it's been a good year so far. I've been on two hunts. My first hunt, I went to Utah. It was an elk hunt, but the elk just were not doing anything. It was actually pretty early, and I was a little worried about that. Their season ends early there. Well, while I was there, I was able to hook up with a landowner, and he gave me a landowner antelope tag, and I shot a really big antelope up with my bow, 78-incher. And my buddy Kent Lancaster shot the biggest buck I've ever had my hands on. 82 is Boone and Crockett, and the one he shot was 87 and 4.8. So we got a couple of really big antelope bucks down. He shot his with a gun. I shot mine with a bow. But fantastic hunt. Great kills on camera. And you know, you'll be able to see those on Bone Collector. And then Kenneth will be on the Given Right television show, which is on the Sportsman's Channel. And then after that, I drove straight to New Mexico, and I shot a really nice bull there. I shot a 340 bull, second day of the hunt, was just an awesome hunt, close up. We followed this bull for about 5 hours through the timber. He just kept bugling. He had about 25 cows with him, and I was just able to kind of keep flanking him on the side, and then I slipped up, and I came up right kind of at the end of the herd, and he happened to just push a couple of cows right by me, and I shot him at 30 yards. So
wow.
It was a phenomenal hunt, and you can see the pictures, you know, from that on my social media as well, at Nick Munt on Facebook, at Nick's Big Game on Instagram and Twitter. So I've got the pictures and everything up there to prove it.
Yeah. So pictures or it didn't happen. Pictures or didn't happen, Nick. Plain and simple.
Yeah. So it's been a good season so far, but I've just kind of been chilling. You know, this, I'm kind of in the middle of a bunch of different things here. So I'm just kind of chilling these first couple of weeks of October. I'm actually going to California next week to film for a new TV program that I'm doing. It's not a hunting show. It's a kind of a mainstream kind of show. It's going to be called, no, I can't even remember the name.
See, that's what happens when you got your fingers in every piece of pie around you.
I know. I got so much stuff going on. But it's kind of a show based on accidents that happen to people. And some of them are bear. Some of them are bear attacks. I think there's a shark attack. People falling out of tree stands, falling off cliffs, stuff like that. And the show is called Survival Science. And so, all we'll be doing is looking into basically some of the things that go into surviving some of the things that have happened to these people. So we'll do some experiments, like what happens to the body when it falls out of a tree stand. How people are affected by, you know, a bear attack, what it does to your adrenaline, what it does to your mind, and how your body, you know, reacts to that kind of shock and stuff like that. So it's going to be a really neat show, and we're going to start filming for that next week. I fly out on the 13th to go out to L.A., and then it'll air sometime in the spring. So really looking forward to that. That'll be cool.
Awesome. Nick Munt joining us here from Michael Waddell's Bone Collector. Of course, he's going to be at Gander Mountain this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. The brand new location in Lansing, right there off of Saginaw Highway next to Menards. My friends Brian Keel, Brian Nymphy, and a bunch of other folks that I know over there have been putting this new store together. And it is, from what I've seen, it's absolutely fantastic, and I'm looking forward to being out there this weekend broadcasting live and getting to talk to Nick, and hopefully, like I said, he'll sneak in a little early, and we'll get him on the air with us, and we're going to talk to you more, Nick, here in a second, and he is out in Minnesota right now at the new boutique, if you will.
That's right.
With some cool stuff, and his girlfriend's out there, and again, I appreciate the fact that I am the highlight of your day, and you know,
week,
Nick. I'm sorry, week. We're going to come back. My buddy Nick Munt joining us here. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Who the hell you think you are? Dancing around with your high heel boots. Don't let that you get too far. Just hanging around with the bands you play for. I ain't got nothing on me.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors. Thank you from Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and
welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, celebrating 10 years on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com, being brought to you in part by Costa Sunglasses. Born on the water with the clearest lenses on the planet. Absolutely love my Costas. Took them to Alaska when my wife and I went here a couple weeks ago, or a week ago. Excuse me, just getting back into things. That time change, that 4 hours behind thing, that was kind of weird. It took us a few days to get balance from that, but Alaska, absolutely beautiful place. Being joined by Nick Munt right now from Michael Waddell's Bone Collector. Nick makes a few stops here to talk with us throughout the course of the year, and we have the opportunity to see him a few times a year as well. And, of course, he'll be at Gander Mountain this weekend. Check the website, gandermountain.com, and we'll be at the Lansing store with the grand opening, and Nick will be there as well, and some other people of note, so to speak. So I'm just kind of lumping you in there, Nick. But we talked about you being busy and you on the road, and you just had a great antelope hunt. That's something I've hunted but not been successful yet. I've only been out once, but we're going to try it again. And you had a really nice elk hunt. But whitetail is, I'm going to say, it's like the everyman's big game animal. But how in God's name, everybody's like, well, tell Nick he can hunt in my place in Michigan. Well, you know, I can guarantee you probably get tons of offers, but it's very difficult to set things down. And how does one go about it with the process, with the type of show you guys have?
You know, it's tough. A lot of offers and a lot of great places. And I will say right off the bat that I'm pretty dang lucky to get to hunt some of the places I get to hunt. I mean, it's not taken for granted, that's for sure. And when it comes down to it, we kind of, especially in November, we kind of frequent the same farms. And we've got a few buddies that are small outfitters, a couple of our friends that just own farms. And so we've kind of honed in on these places. You know, I've been in this business for 20 years now, and over the course of those 20 years I've worked for Realtree for a long time, and so I've gotten to know some of these people that I'm hunting with, and they just have really, really good hunting spots. And so to find new spots is a little tougher, because you don't know what you're going into, and there's a lot invested when you do a TV show. You know, you've got everybody's travel that you got to pay for, you got to pay for camera guys, you got to pay for the production team, you got to pay for all the tags and all the stuff that comes along with it. So you want to go to a place where your odds are good. You know, obviously everybody wants to hunt a good place, and so the way we hunt, you know, we're here 5 days, there 5 days, the next place 5 days. So we don't have an opportunity to maybe sit on our own farm at home and hunt for 30 days, because we have to produce 20 original shows for Bone Collector and 13 for road trips. So we've got to move around quite a bit, and you know, we do go to a few new places every year, but just picking the places to go is kind of tough, because you don't know what you're walking into. There's a lot invested. So especially this time of year, we like to kind of stick with those same places that we've been hunting for a while, and we've just gotten to know everybody. They know our system, we know theirs, and so a lot of the places that we go, you know, we have already been there a time or two. But each year we'd go to a new spot, if you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's
a little bit tough.
It is. It's seeing as many people, I mean, off season, even during the season, as you guys see, you know, there's always great pictures, there's always great stories, and it's got to be tough, especially when you do like the big shows, like the Archery Trade Association show or the one in Pennsylvania, you know, that big deal. It's if you've never done shows like this, if you've never sat and talked with people, it's mentally taxing, and not in a bad way, but man, by the time you're done, you're fried.
Yeah, it's definitely work. A lot of people get to go to shows and
we're having phone troubles. Here I become the highlight of his week, and now I start to lose him.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear. See, I knew that'd bring you back.
All right. So, yeah, so those trade shows can be pretty tough. You know, they're long hours. We're there from 9 in the morning till 7 or 8 at night. Pretty much, you know, stand around and visit with people, look at pictures, and hug babies and enjoy the people. And that's kind of what it's all about. But they definitely turn into some long hours sometimes, which I'm not complaining about because I really love what I do. But the hunting part for me is definitely the part that I love the most. You know, I love being in the field, the strategy that comes along with, you know, hanging stands and figuring out where deer are moving and all that stuff is definitely my favorite. So,
you know, and like we've talked to you over the years, Nick Munt, our guest here from Michael Boisdell's Bone Collector, 7-8 years ago, I really didn't know who you guys were because I didn't really watch outdoors television. And I found myself immersing myself into this business, into the show life and everything else. And we've gotten to know you and we've gotten to get these tips from you here on the show. And I'm going to this one's coming from me. This question's coming from me because this is kind of personal and close to home. This year, Nick, I'll be honest with you, I've had a very hard time getting into whitetail season, and I don't know why. I don't even feel like it's here yet, and we're, you know, into the first week of October. I need a verbal slap in the face from you because I don't know what's going on with me.
Well, you know, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. In fact, I personally think if this time of year, most of your maybe the target bucks you're after, and I don't know how it is in your area, if you're after a 3-year-old buck or a 2-year-old buck or 4-year-old buck, but I definitely think the longer that you hold out of your spot, because most of these deer, let's face it, I mean, they're deer nocturnal animals, and they typically move at night. And so if you're in there just spinning your wheels, just sitting in the tree stand, just killing time, your scent's getting put out there, your trails in and out are getting scented up, the deer kind of figuring out that there's people in the woods. To me, if I have a small area that I'm hunting and I know there's some good deer in there, I'm not probably going to hunt it until I know that those deer are on their feet in the daylight. And so, you know, a lot of people are really hardcore hunters just like me, and I want to be in the woods, but a lot of times if you start too early, all you're doing is kind of alerting the deer to your presence, letting them get you in a pattern rather than you getting them in a pattern. I think a lot of times if you got trail cameras out, you're getting pictures of your bucks, but it's all at night, you just try to stay out of there if you can until you're getting daylight pictures and then get in there and hunt, because you're not going to get those deer on their feet in the daylight in the early season. I mean, it's just the way they are. It's the way they live. It's the way biology has those animals, you know, moving at night, because that's just what they do. So I think sometimes it might be better to start a little later because you're not filling the woods with your scent, and the animals don't know you're there, and then they make the mistake of going after the girls, and then you're sitting there waiting for them. So.
Well, I tell you, now I feel better. Now I can pick up my bow. Now I can start getting myself all straightened around. I know I should have been doing this all year, but I can always look to you for advice, man. I appreciate it. Nick Munt, he's going to be at the Gander Mountain Store this coming Saturday and Sunday. We'll be hanging out there with him. I'll be out there broadcasting live 8 to 10 before it opens up. Appreciate you, man, as always, here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Thanks, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Knows all the stories it can tell. Granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Nick Munt from Michael Waddell's Bone Collector for joining us again, man. Good friend of mine. He's been on and off this show, I don't know, a lot over the past 8 years, maybe more. And he and Michael and T-Bone have all been great friends, and Nick is going to be at the Gander Mountain Store here in Lansing, grand opening this weekend. I'll be out there broadcasting live with the classic rock station I work with, and hanging out with Nick. It's going to be a great time. Herman Moore is going to be there. Dean Rojas is going to be there. It's going to be just a big, big deal. And those guys have taken really good care of us over the years, so we thank Gander Mountain as well. Now, let's talk a little bit of fishing. We talked earlier in the show with David A. Rose, an outdoor writer and friend of ours. He's been on the show with us for 10 years, but we have somebody new coming in, and we have Stephen Sautner, who is an author. Am I saying that right, Stephen? I forgot to ask you beforehand.
Yeah, Sautner.
Okay, good. Now, you are the author of a book called Fish On, Fish Off, but you are a former New York Times outdoors columnist.
Right.
That's a pretty heavy gig.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I did that for about 15 years. There was a stable of writers who they would pick from, and it was great because you could sort of write whatever you wanted, and they would run it, which was a lot of fun. But, you know, as you know, unfortunately, the outdoor columns of a lot of papers are sort of a thing of the past. So it phased out a few years back. But it was a great 15-year run while it lasted, and a lot of fun to write for the Times.
Now, in those 15 years, let me backpedal a little bit. There had to be something of you know, a personal experience or of a lifetime of fishing that led up to you writing, especially getting a gig like the New York Times.
I'm a storyteller by nature. You know, I always loved to tell stories when I fished, and I grew up in a family of people who did not fish. You know, my dad doesn't fish. No one in my family does. I never had a grandfather who was like, "Come on, son, I'll show you how to fish." So I was self-taught, and I write about that in the book and the challenges of being self-taught. I mean like really self-taught, like doing really, really silly things. Like, there's a story in the book where my dad suggests to me, I think I was about 15 years old, and I just started to fish like really hardcore at that point. And I fished only with live bait, and I used to catch bait at the Jersey Shore, where we would have a house every summer. And my dad was like a pragmatic guy, and one day he says to me, he's like a New Yorker through and through, and he's like, "Why are you catching all that bait? You should buy a lure. You won't need to catch that bait." And I was like, "Yeah, I didn't own a lure. I didn't know the first thing about lures." And so I went to this tackle shop. My parents drove me to this tackle shop at the Jersey Shore, and this was like a hardcore, locals, serious tackle shop. And they weren't particularly nice. I think in the book I call them tackle Nazis. And so I go walking in. I'm this 15-year-old kid. You know, my parents gave me like $5 and said, "Go ahead, buy a lure." And I go in and I said, "Oh, well, where are the lures?" And they go, "Oh, down there." And I go down this aisle and there's just all these striped bass lures. I mean, this is striped bass country, so there were like swimming plugs as long as my arm. These like surgical tubes with these big hooks. There were these poppers and swimmers, and they had these like military names. There was a, you know, bombers and Polaris and all this stuff. And I just didn't know where to start. And so there's a lure hanging there in this package, and it says on it, on the package, "Striped bass." And I'm like, "Yeah, yeah. Blue fish, yeah, yeah. Weak fish, yeah, yeah. I got to get this lure." So I bought it. It was a diamond jig, which is a very popular saltwater lure. And I go to this fishing pier. So my parents are going to drive me to the tackle shop, buy the lure, we go to this fishing pier. So we go to the pier, you have to pay an admission fee, and there's like these pictures of these guys in the tackle shop, you know, holding these giant fish they caught off the pier. I'm so excited. So I tie in this diamond jig. My parents sit on the bench, you know, these benches along the pier, and they read the paper. And I make this cast, and lure sails out there, hits the ocean, and then the line starts going off the reel. I'm like, "Oh, wow, it's going deep," and then it hits the bottom. And I was like, "Great." I put the rod down, and I sat for 15 minutes waiting for a bite, not knowing that with a lure, you're supposed to actually reel it in. So that's where I started from. I started with just no information, the most basic information, like, "Hey, kid, you know, when you fish a lure, you cast and reel it in." I didn't even know. So it sat there for 15 minutes on the bottom, and I waited for it, probably buried under the sand, crabs looking at it, waiting for a striper to come along and eat it. That didn't happen. My parents were like, "How's the fishing?" I was like, "Nothing. Nothing grabbed that lure yet, huh? No." So I reel in. I cast over there, let it sit for 20 minutes. The lure just sitting on the bottom. Eventually, I lost the lure, thank God. And then I bought live bait, and I caught little snapper bluefish. So that's kind of where I came from. But anyway, I always love to tell stories, and since no one in my family fished, you know, I couldn't come back with stories about fish that I caught or didn't catch or whatever, so I wrote them down. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got, that's a long-winded answer of saying how I started to write about fishing.
Stephen Sautner's our guest here. The book is called Fish On, Fish Off. And you know what? And it's funny because there's probably people out there that go, you know, that was me.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, I didn't have anybody to teach me how to fish. In Michigan, I almost find that to be impossible, but, you know, it's like the look I get when I tell people I'm from the city and I hunt.
Yeah,
well,
right.
Lansing's not a big city. You're 15 minutes from the woods or water anywhere.
Yeah.
So why is that a shock? But, you know, these personal experiences of somebody being self-taught to turning into a life's work as a New York Times outdoor columnist, now an author. And I don't have a ton of time in this segment, but I mean, that right there, it's like an episode of the Goldbergs, but fishing. You know, it's one of those things that maybe someplace on the Sportsman's Channel or the Outdoor Channel, there's going to be a lot of reenactments of your life from this book. And I can see that.
Well, that would be cool. But, you know, the point of the book, first of all, the Times writing I did was, like, very sort of poetic and very, very polished, thanks to the editors, you know. And it was, you know, I would paint a picture of a scene, and I'd usually catch a fish, and I'd write about, you know, a little bit of how-to and that sort of thing, which was great. So that was, like, poetic. The stories in this book are kind of like the scars of fishing. It's like, as I told fishing stories to friends and had friends tell me stories, I started to notice that I liked the stories where things went wrong, you know? I liked the stories where you fell in, or you broke your rod, or you got chased by a bear, or the boogeyman, you know? You were fishing, and it was, like, at night, and you got spooked, and all of a sudden, they got to get out of here, and I do write about stories like that. I thought those stories, to me, and as I told them to people, my own experiences, they were much more entertaining, and people seemed to like them more than, like, hey, let me tell you about how I caught this 20-pound or this 20-inch brown trout on a size 18 Adams. And, you know, then, like, the hardcore fish guys are into that, but everyone else sort of glazes over. So these stories, I hope, sort of transcend, when I write a story, I always hope my mom will get a kick out of it. And,
sure.
And she loves these stories, so it worked. And so, like, you don't have to be a real technical fishing guy to get a kick out of them. Yeah, the technical fishing guy can relate to these stories, I would think. And everyone has these stories. Most people don't like to tell them because they're embarrassing or whatever. And maybe because I have no shame, I just said, what the heck, let's just tell them. So I've got stories about falling in. I have a story about every rod I ever broke, and it's a long list. I have stories about being chased out of an Alaska river by a brown bear, etc. So,
all right, we're speaking with Stephen Sautner here. The book is called Fish On, Fish Off, and of course you can find that on Amazon.com, correct?
Yes, you can.
All right, we got a whole other segment. We're going to talk to you more, find out more about this book coming up here, the personal experiences of a self-taught angler. And that whole falling in thing, yeah, me, Prairie Creek, going in while trout fishing, looking up from the bottom of the water, up at my hat floating on top. Yeah, I've been there. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, celebrating 10 years on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website is wildmichiganradio.com. We'll throw up a link to Stephen Sautner's new book, Fish On, Fish Off. We are speaking with him right now. Stephen, you know, we talked about this briefly, but I want to recap this because when you said you were a kid, didn't know anything about fishing, and there's the old guys, you know, that have been fishing their whole lives, they're telling stories for 100 years. And I know the look you got. You got that look of walking into a gun shop, and they all look at you like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the mom-and-pop tackle shop, which I absolutely love, and it's sad to see them sort of go by the wayside as the big box stores sort of take over and internet stuff takes over. But, yeah, there was one in my hometown, and it was like a social club. And I started going in there when I was 15 years old or so. And there was like a group of guys, and they'd be sitting around either drinking coffee or, depending on the time of day, they'd have these paper bags with beer in them. And they'd be in the middle of the store, and then as soon as I walked in, silence.
The piano player stops.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah, it was like a bad scene in a movie. But and they weren't particularly friendly. And one day they played a practical joke on me. At least I think it was. I never actually confirmed what it was, but they told me. I was a little bit older at this point. I've been going in the shop because I could drive. I know that. I started going there when I was in eighth or ninth grade, so I could drive at this point. And they told me they were catching weak fish, which are these big, glamorous saltwater sort of sea trout fish that in New Jersey everyone wants to catch. Big weak fish at this certain parking area along this beach. And it was called Lot G. That was the name of the parking lot. And they just said, we're catching weak fish. I was like, oh, my God, they finally gave me a tip. This is awesome. So I stuffed my car with tackle, and I drove down there, and I was, like, so proud. Oh, my God, I've been welcomed into their inner circle. This is going to be great. They're going to take me tuna fishing and all this. And I get to Lot G, and to make a long story short, I put all my gear on. This is going to be a very serious surf fishing trip. So I got my waders, my raincoat, my plug bag, my gaff, my fillet knife, my headlamp in case I was going to fish all night, my 9-foot surf rod. And I go walking out on this beach, and there's a lot of people there, which seemed kind of weird, but they were sort of far away. I wasn't really paying attention. And then I start fishing on this beach, and I was like, something's weird about this, because I remember it was October. It was a nice day in October, but I'm like, why are there so many people on this beach? And then I finally sort of turn around and give everyone a good look, and every last one of them was naked. It was a nude beach. And I had heard about this nude beach somewhere, and, well, wouldn't you know it, now I'm in the middle of it. And I turn back around, and I should say that, I guess I was 18 or 19 years old. This was not the nude beach I had hoped it would be, with like beautiful girls, giggling. This was like going to like the DMZ, except everyone's nude. This was nudity for the masses. So I turn, and I'm like, hurrah! And I turn back around, and I'm trying to fish. And then people start to walk toward me because they want to, hey, how's the fishing? I did not want to turn back around at this point. So I just kind of very quickly, like, sidestepped down the beach. So I got way past sort of the nude part and then sidestepped all the way to my car and drove back to the, drove back home. And then the next time in the tackle shop, they said, oh, how was the fishing at Lot G? And I just, it was funny. I kind of was like, how do I play this? So I just kind of nodded my head. I was like, yeah, and just got out of the store. So, like, it could have meant anything. Like, maybe I caught a weak fish. But that was good fun at my expense at the mom-and-pop tackle shop, which sadly is no longer there. But
well, the thing is, too, I can pretty much identify with that experience. I wasn't originally going to share this on the air, but like I mentioned, I work at a classic rock station here in Lansing also, and one day we did a 4-hour remote at a nudist resort. And it was like you said, everyone that, shouldn't have been naked was.
Everyone's naked.
And you saw things, that you never would see normally.
Yeah.
And just oddities. And it was, I can't even go into detail, but, but it was the guy fishing. It was the guy fishing up to his knees in the water, casting a plug. And I'm like, this could go horribly wrong. He'll end up with a piercing he didn't want. But I mean, your book is full of stories like that. It's called Fish On, Fish Off, and as you mentioned, you have been in some place, exotic places, fishing. I mean, and like Jeremy Wade type stuff.
Yeah. He endorsed my book, which was very nice. So I work for the Wildlife Conservation Society, which runs the Bronx Zoo, and we have field projects all over the world in 60 countries and in very exotic locations. And every now and then, I get to travel to some of them. So I've been to the Falkland Islands in the southern Atlantic, where there's a really, really fun fish to catch called a Falkland's mullet, which just doesn't sound very fun. But it's like a redfish that jumps. They come in really shallow water. You can fly fish for them. And I'd heard about them, and the local guys were saying, the local Falklanders, who are Brits, they were saying, like, oh, use a piece of mutton for bait, like a piece of cheap meat. And I was like, eh, I don't think I'll do that. But I fly fished for them, and I caught several, and they were so fun. And I write about those in the book. And I'd been to the Amazon. I've been to Africa a couple of times. And I've been to Cuba. And Cuba, I had a really kind of a profound experience. I go on these trips, and they're work trips, but, you know, I sneak a pack rod just in case because I'm a fisherman, you know, who wouldn't?
Sure.
And I brought an 8-weight fly rod with me, and I was hoping to bonefish in Cuba. And I've been reading about fishing in Cuba since I was a kid, and like old stories. There's a great book called Saltwater Fishing by Van Camp and Heilner. It's from the 30s, and it's great. You read it, and you're like, oh, my God, it's just amazing. Sounds so amazing. So anyway, make a long story short, I went to this research station, and there were a couple of guides there who would take you out for like $20 on the little skiff, and they'd pull you out to bonefish. So my friends, my scientist friends who were there, were like, oh, we're going to go bird watching for a while. You go fishing. So I'm in the middle of this flat, and I make a cast, first cast, and I spook bonefish. They were there. And then the guide sort of pulls me along a little more, and I go to make my second cast, and I'm stripping line off my rod, and I break my rod. And here I am in Cuba, which I've been dreaming about since being a kid, with a broken 8-weight fly rod.
Oh, no.
And I'm sitting there going, oh, no, I can't believe it. It was like I was in hell. I couldn't believe it. It was like the cruelest joke had been played on me. So I'm sitting there with my fly rod, 2 feet of my fly rod just dangling. And here's the thing. I've been in Cuba now for about a week, and Cubans, at least now, and this is going to change soon, Cubans have very little, and they make do with very little. And you see it in the American cars that they still drive,
sure.
You know, all these cars from the 50s. If their fuel pump breaks, they can't go to Napa. They have to, like, literally manufacture a fuel pump. And so this whole philosophy among the Cubans of, like, getting by no matter what, it's called a lo Cubano, which means, like, the way of the Cuban. And I heard Cubans saying this to each other quite a bit. Ah, a lo Cubano this, a lo Cubano that. And they were kind of proud of it. So anyway, I'm on this skiff now with this broken rod, and my guide just sort of twists off the broken piece, which was just hanging by a sliver of graphite, restrings the rod, hands it back to me, and he goes, Senor, he spoke very little English, Senor, bonefish, and he points, and there's bonefish. So I'm like, oh, God. So I get up, so, well, you know, and I manage the world's worst fly cast on this broken rod, and I hook a bonefish. And I landed, and it wasn't big. It was like 2 pounds. It was small. But to me, it might as well have been 20.
Sure.
I was so happy. And I like to land my own fish. So I reach down, and I bring the fish up, and I show it to him. And he had the biggest smile. And like I said, he didn't speak much English. And he goes, Senor, you catch that fish a lo Cubano. And I was so proud of that. I was like, yeah, I did catch that fish a lo Cubano. And, you know, like, it was a 2-pound bonefish on a broken rod, yet to this day, that remains, like, one of my greatest fish, like, the fish I'm most proud of, because the whole story was just amazing. It was, like, scripted for me, and it was a beautiful thing. It really was.
Well, I tell you what, I am so looking forward to this book. It is called Fish On, Fish Off. You can find it on Amazon.com. We have been speaking with Stephen Sautner, the author. And you know what? I told you this. I mean, just talking to you in the first segment of this, I can see this show, you know what I mean, of reenactments. And God, I hope something happens. But at least pick up the book, because these stories I'm having with you right now are absolutely fantastic. Now, is there a website that you have that we can send people?
Yes, it is StephenSautner.com.
All right, we will put a link on our website at the podcast section. Make sure you pick up the podcast of this show, because we will make sure to post all that there. And we really, really appreciate you joining us, man. This has been such a fun time. Stephen Sautner has been our guest here on Wild Michigan. Thank you, Stephen, so very much.
Thank you. It was great.
Absolutely, man. I am laughing still. And I'm not joking about that nude beach stuff. Frightening. Just frightening. Thanks so much. 10 years of Wild Michigan coming at you here on the Michigan Talk Network.